Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Episode 6 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. My name is Matthew Davis, and I'm joined as usual with my co-host and buddy, Matt Kupferle. And today we are going to be jumping into a bit of the news that's been going on around the league and just trying to face ourselves with the current shit show that is going on in Major League Baseball. So, Matt, how are you feeling? What are you thinking, dude?
You know, I am pleasantly surprised about how things have been handled. It should have always been in place this way, but it sounds like baseball is going to start taking things maybe a little bit more seriously. I think we all were ecstatic to have baseball back. I think we all also are worried about the current climate of what's going on with baseball and COVID-19. And I think we all saw a superfluous amount of pictures and live video of games where, you know, it's one of those things I think we all kind of wondered, like, when a really big play happens or a home run, like, are they going to hug and shake hands? And they did. So, you know, I think this has opened our eyes to how serious we need to take what's going on. And it sounds like, you know, they're making some serious strides with guys like Mike Trout and others that are getting on base wearing masks. You know, it's getting pretty serious, and I think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, so the Marlins, they're up to 17 total staff, you know, club members, players total, and that have tested positive, including Jorge Alfaro, Garrett Cooper, Jose Urena, Miguel Rojas, etc. And they're not going to be playing until Monday. And so if you're playing in the NFBC or even daily leagues, you're obviously got to get these guys out until Friday, but you were kind of stuck in a hard spot when Monday through Thursday lineups in the NFBC being weekly for hitters. So how are you going to be managing these guys moving forward? I know that a lot of these Marlins players aren't heavily touted, highly draft capital players, but like, people did invest in Jonathan Villar, and you can't just simply cut him because of the current situation. You can't just cut him because of the current situation. So tell me, what do you do right now to try and to fill these spots or these, you know, open holes that the Marlins are kind of giving you?
I'm an investor of Jonathan Villar. It's a team that I co-own with Brian Vogel. You know, we were one pick away. We were probably going to go with Keston Hira, but we wanted some speed and we got VR and we were pretty excited about it. And like you said, he's out. So I'm obviously not cutting him. That for me, at least, it's too high of a pick, and I'm hopeful that they are back to playing baseball on Monday. I'm hopeful that they make some of these games up. I think, Matthew, that's a question that's on everybody's minds too, is that I think Rob Manfred made a comment yesterday that it doesn't necessarily mean that the Marlins will make up all of these games. And unfortunately, they were playing all seven games this week. So I don't know that that means they're playing 53 games, but I do think they're going to attempt to make some of these games up. Obviously, like you mentioned, you get them out of your lineups. For me, a guy like Jonathan Villar, you know, I'm holding on to. I was able to get him out of my lineup before the week started. I have John Birdie late in some draft champions leagues and some other things. I like that speed there, and he was starting to play and bat in the two-hole. And I was a big Corey Dickerson guy in 15-teamers. I even liked him as maybe your fifth or sixth outfielder or a util spot because the dude rakes. So I'm fine if you can hold on to them. It's always a tricky, you know, conversation to navigate with these fellas on can you hold or not. I think you can hold on to maybe one more week, but like we've talked about, you've only got, I think, 8 more fab weeks to go. Guys like Dickerson, Birdie, any of the pitchers, I think if you need to cut them for a spot, you can. VR for me is one I think I would hold on to.
That's yes, very well said. And so the next team is the Cincinnati Reds, which aren't as extreme as the Miami Marlins, but the Reds had Mike Moustakas and Nick Senzel scratched from the weekend lineup. And people started speculating that they had tested positive for COVID-19. And then yesterday it came out that both had been testing negative. And word on the Twitter streets is that they were appealing it. And so now Mike Moustakas and Nick Senzel are both, I'm pretty sure they're able to be in the lineup starting on Thursday, tomorrow. So what are you doing with Mike Moustakas and Nick Senzel if everything is coming to fruition and they're back in the lineups? What are you doing with Mike Moustakas and Nick Senzel?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously irrelevant, Matthew, for today's play. If you're in a daily league, according to Twitter, Nick Senzel said 20 minutes ago that he's back right away. So I don't know if that means today or tomorrow or what's going on. But very interesting, obviously. And the Reds have three righties this weekend. They're going back to Detroit, which is kind of a weird quirk in the schedule. But they'll actually be finished with the Tigers after this weekend, which is, you know, kind of an odd scheduling quirk. But they've got Spencer Turnbull, Michael Fulmer, and Garcia, all righties. So that would obviously make for a really good play for Moustakas having that platoon advantage. You know, I'm going to assume if they're in the lineup that they're ready to go. And, you know, I like both of these guys. I think they're impact bats. It'll be interesting to see if they do get back into the lineup. But it's a good sign for baseball if they're back. Those are, you know, that's a really good team that off to a little bit of a bumpy start. But I'm going to put them without hesitation. If they're in the lineup, those are two guys that I'm probably playing. Senzel, maybe a little bit more matchup dependent on the format. I may have a better option than him. But for Moose, I'm definitely putting him right back into my lineups.
That's all right. Yeah. If you're in the NFBC and you see Mike Moustakas back in the lineup tomorrow on Thursday, he's an auto plug Friday through Sunday for the weekend. You know, there hasn't been a delay or too much time off for him to, you know, need his bat speed to pick back up. He looked pretty damn good early on. So definitely want to get those guys back in if they're playing. The next interesting thing was the Nationals. They had their games canceled against the Marlins this weekend. And so we're still trying to figure out the whole Juan Soto issue and his testing positive, testing negative. How are we handling the National situation? I know that there's highly invested draft capital in Trey Turner and Juan Soto. Yep. I have a share of Stephen Strasburg, and it was said that he had a bullpen session yesterday on Tuesday. And they're still not sure when he's going to have his next start in the rotation. So how are we managing current Washington Nationals players?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think for the weekend, you got to get them out of your lineups. This Juan Soto thing is weird. You know, there's I think we saw yesterday, I think the exact wording, Matthew, was ongoing frustration with Juan Soto. It sounds like he's tested up almost 10 times negatively, but there may have been whatever you want to call it, a positive, a false positive. I'm not sure the right nomenclature, but a positive mixed in there somewhere, which kind of restarts his clock if he's got to get two negatives again. It's tricky. I think Soto is just like Mike Moustakas. You know, you probably spent late first round, maybe early second round draft capital on him. I think if he's back, he's ready to go. He has claimed that he, you know, feels really well, the reports that we've heard. So this is going to be one of those things. It's going to be a little bit bumpy. And honestly, as I've been talking with people, it's going to be the people that pay the most attention to these situations that get him in the lineup. Maybe it buys Soto a little bit more time if they're not playing this weekend, that he can hopefully certainly be back in the lineup by Monday, because it sounds like the Nationals, along with a couple of other teams, have received permission to test players daily or certain players because of what's gone on with the Marlins, which, you know, more testing is always a good thing. I'm getting like Mike Moustakas, like the concern about a guy like Freddie Freeman. If Austin Meadows appears this weekend, I am probably playing any of those guys right away. And again, maybe that's a aggressive approach to take, but I gotta feel like it's the right one to do.
Right. And another one of those players that has gotten their first negative COVID test back was Aroldis Chapman. And it's funny to see some of these Yankees, not funny, but it could be funny if, you know, you see a couple of Yankees games be postponed and pushed back. Those are extra games or given extra games to Aroldis Chapman eventually down the road. So he's not back yet either, but he's kind of in that Austin Meadows area. I've seen him working out and I know that he's feeling good. He was asymptomatic and he was falling late in drafts, or not late, but considering the closing mark, he was going in the sixth and sometimes the seventh round in the main events. And from what it sounds like, Aroldis Chapman should be back sooner than later as well. And he's another one of those persons, just like Austin Meadows and Juan Soto. When they're back, you just plug them in and you just move on and try and figure out the bottom part of your lineup.
As an Aroldis Chapman owner in a league in an online championship, I am really excited for him to get back and help a team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple of main event teams, and one of them is paired with Hader and Chapman. And I think I have, I don't know, Nick Birdie or somebody like that that's paired with them. So trying to, you know, think that that's going to be something good, but who knows what's going to happen. This season's been pretty erratic as it is. And so the thing that yesterday, a lot of people on Twitter were, They were pissed, man. The Rays situation that we saw another Oliver Drake save. People pissed some money away on Greg Holland after we saw Greg Holland and Mike Matheny's manager speak. They spent money on Greg Holland, and then he ended up pitching the seventh inning yesterday. Drew Pomeranz ended up coming in and getting a save, albeit the Padres had Yates pitching on Sunday and Monday. So Saturday and Sunday. So it was a back-to-back. So
right.
Drew Pomeranz was the guy there. And then the Mets, we saw Edwin Diaz get a back-to-back save opportunity and blow one of them. And then the next save opportunity, we saw Seth Lugo get the four-out save. The Athletics, same situation. Liam Hendricks got a save or blew a save, then got a save. And then Joachim Soria in the third day got the third save. So, there's two more, actually. The Cubs, Craig Kimbrell, we saw him shit the bed pretty bad. His velocity was down. Location was shit. And we saw Jeremy Jeffress come in and fill in for him. And then Nick Birdie was just absolute lights out, which is awesome to see after all of the Tommy John surgeries. Kyle Crick's on the IL. Keone Kayla's on the IL. Nick Birdie could provide one of the biggest ROIs at the RP position this season, even with it being on the Pirates.
Yep.
So the Rays, Royals, Padres, Mets, A's, Cubs, and Pirates. How are you handling any of these situations if you have shares of some of these players? Are you freaking out? Are you confident in some of them that are kind of coming out of nowhere? Where are you at in this big, giant clusterfuck?
I would say, hopefully folks listened to our Fab Pod over the weekend, because I think, Matthew, you did a great job, not only in your article, but in the podcast as well, highlighting a lot of these situations. I'll try to move through these pretty quickly. The ones I have the most confidence in, I actually have no concern whatsoever about Liam Hendricks in Oakland, but I wouldn't mind throwing a couple bucks at Soria just to make sure that I had him. Hendricks has looked really good, actually, to me. I know there were some concerns opening night that maybe his velocity was down, but he looked great in his next save opportunity. I don't have any concerns there whatsoever. I totally agree with your assessment on Nick Birdie, and he's available in a lot of my leagues. I'm probably going to take a shot there on him. Honestly, the one that I'm probably the most excited about out of any of the ones next is, and this is a guy that I don't think you even mentioned, but the guy I think I want to own the most is Diego Castillo of the Rays.
Yes.
He is awesome. They're going to mix and match there. It is clear that to them, Nick Anderson is a weapon and a power arm, but that they want to utilize to get to the back end of that, to that game. I continue to think, and it could be, Matthew, that they do Nick Anderson in the seventh, and if there's a right-handed sticks that are in and Anderson either can't go that second inning, they may bring in Castillo in the eighth. They may bring in Oliver Drake. I'm not sure what they're going to do exactly to mix and match there, but I love Diego Castillo. I was so disappointed when he became a Ray because I had him for a super cheap price. Keep me honest, he was a San Diego Padre prior to the season, correct?
Not this season. No, he was in Tampa last season.
That's right. I think I've mentioned to some of the listeners on the show, I play in NL onlys and I had some shares of Castillo super cheap. I loved him in that pen, but I just love the arm. I love the stuff. I think he is nasty. And I think when you look at these situations, what overrides all this is you buy the stuff and the skills and usually the job translates later. So that's like, you know, that's why Nick Birdie is so attractive to me. That's why Craig Kimbrell is so frightening, because he looks so bad right now. I don't know that you want to go there. I was a heavy investor also, and you mentioned the Met situation with Edwin Diaz. I still think that he's got the job, but I also believe, given the jumble and given that the Mets have Seth Lugo, they've got Dellin Betances, you know, and they've got Jacob deGrom. That window isn't going to be open forever with Jacob deGrom. And they showed yesterday, they've been tinkering that lineup. They put Ahmad Rosario up to the leadoff spot. They put Cano down. I think J.D. Davis hit cleanup maybe or third yesterday with Conforto slotted up.
Cleanup, yeah.
It's a good offense. And if they can get some things figured out there, I don't think they're going to mess around. So that one does make me a little bit nervous, but I think – you know, Diaz is okay. And I think one other one I failed to mention that you highlighted, I think Kirby Yates is fine in San Diego, but Drew Pomeranz is freaking filthy, absolutely filthy in that pen. So if I'm going to buy on any of the candidates in any of these pens, I think you're absolutely right. I think we're buying on Nick Birdie. He's the man. That could be a huge win if you need some save help. Hopefully you didn't blow all your fab, because I saw some crazy fab bidding this weekend from what we saw. I'm holding on a guy like Kirby Yates. I think he's fine. I'm holding for now on Edwin Diaz, but I would buy Seth Lugo if he's available. I'm not sure if he would or wouldn't be. I'm holding on Liam Hendricks. And then I think the others, you got to be real fluid and you got to check and see what's on your waiver wire. What are you thinking? Is there anyone that sticks out to you?
Yeah, the most interesting thing that I noticed, and this is in the NFBC main event, and albeit 15 teams, Diego Castillo was cut by 18% of the team. So his ownership is down from 82%. Yes. And that is an overreaction from owners that simply didn't pay attention to what was happening. Diego Castillo was not used in the first weekend, and that was simply because he had a baby, and he was on paternity leave, and a reliever that's not highly touted, and he's not Aroldis Chapman or Kenley Jansen, that's not going to flood the news because he's not deemed the closer. He's just a reliever. And I had no fucking clue what was going on, and I was starting to get tilted on Saturday or Sunday. Yep. So I texted Yancey Eaton, and I said, where the hell is Diego Castillo? And he explained to me that he was on paternity leave. And guess what? On Monday, Diego Castillo comes in. He's lights out. I even want to say, yep, he vultured a win, got two strikeouts, no hits, no runs. It's just flawless. Diego Castillo's money. He's going to get some save opportunities. We've already seen him vulture a win. The Rays are going to be competitive. They're fully stacked. They're ready to go. Castillo's going to be in some high leverage situations, similar to like Blake Treinen at the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's going to be in high leverage situations. Anytime that most of the guys that we mentioned, by the way, even if it's a 10-team or 12-team league, Joachim Soria, Seth Lugo, Drew Pomeranz, they might not be the set-in-stone closers, but these guys are going to have much more value than you wanting to roll out. Good Lord, look at all the starting pitchers that went yesterday and look what happened. All these people are wanting to overpay for these two steps because they're insecure about volume and they want to try and rack up Ks and they want to try and rack up wins. Well, these starters aren't fully ramped up yet and this season isn't a marathon anymore. So these starters are going to get yanked quicker. And if they're not sharp and on their game, they're going to fuck your ratios up and they're not going to give you a win while not racking up a lot of Ks. So I am truly invested in a lot of these guys that we're talking about over somebody that's going to be this week's, you know, two-step because, look at the matchups or whatever. He might go four innings and give up three runs, get two strikeouts, and he's done. And that's not going to help you. And so I really find all of these relievers viable. I mean, we saw yesterday people were tilted because Taylor Rogers from the Minnesota Twins has still not gotten an opportunity out of the bullpen. And it was almost similar with Josh Hader. Like, where the fuck are these guys? We're now in game four and we still haven't seen these guys. So Sergio Romo gave up a run. Then it became a save opportunity. He was already ramped up. He started to look fine. He got comfortable and settled in. He got the save. We didn't see Taylor Rogers. So you might see some of these managers give these setup guys a little bit more burn, especially if the closer pitched the day before. And if the guy that's in that high leverage eighth inning role, they're going to get some saves along the way. Yep. And they're elite high strikeout rates for the most part. And they're not going to get blown up. You know, obviously it's possible that they get blown up, but the likelihood of them getting blown up rather than some starter or scrub starter that you're wanting to two step, that stuff will fuck you over and it costs you a lot in your fab budget allocation. So I'd much rather just throw it like last week you mentioned when we started talking about Joachim Soria on our fab podcast. If you would have thrown a buck at him, you've already gotten one or two strikeouts and a save this week for a dollar. What did you get with Wade Miley or whoever else, you know, you wanted to get cute with? So you really need to tread with some caution. Yep. And I think that these relievers, look at them as vulturing a save, look at them as a possibility of vulturing a win, but putting out a fire or not creating a fire, because some of these mediocre fourth or fifth starters and they're getting their two steps, those two steps might burn you twice as bad rather than helping you twice as bad. So all of those guys, man, I like all of them. One last guy, the Cubs, we touched on Kimbrel and his velocity, his shitty command. Jeremy Jeffers is the guy that came in. We know that he has closer experience is that's in his portfolio, and he's also been a closer in the NL Central when he was with the Brewers. I'm sorry. So I think that that's the guy that I would want to throw a little bit of coin at. I know that people wanted to keep mentioning Rowan Wick, but his velo was down, and he kind of came in the middle innings. So
yeah,
Jeremy Jeffress would be my guy there. There was a couple things that you were talking to me about that you got me excited about, Matt.
Yeah.
Leaving the carousel and the chaos that's the bullpen. Let's go to some starting pitchers and some hitters that have been kind of sliding up into some lineups.
Yep.
And the first one's Merrill Kelly of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He was amazing against the Rangers. And I'm going to give you the floor. Please, just tell everybody about Merrill Kelly.
So his Merrill Kelly is interesting, and I think if anybody's owned Merrill Kelly, myself included in past years, he's uber frustrating to own. He'll go through just dominant stretches, and then he'll have some really, really poor stretches. So he's been a frustrating one to own. If anybody watched yesterday, I think he took a no-hitter into the seventh inning, looked absolutely brilliant, albeit against a Rangers roster that just is not right yet, and they may struggle all year. It's, you know, I think it's got some good bats at the top. I like that they're trying to give Nick Solak some more opportunity, and I'd like to see Willie Calhoun in there a little bit more, but they're struggling right now. But that being said, the biggest thing for me is it looks like he modified his pitch mix a little bit. He used his curve and his cutter, according to MLB Savant, a little bit more at the expense of his fastball, which I think, you know, as we've all seen through a bunch of folks, Aaron Civale didn't throw a fastball until pitch 21 yesterday to start a game. You know, these guys are learning and learning from what they should and shouldn't be throwing. So it looks like Kelly has, you know, obviously made some changes. It looks like through one start, again, small sample size. To me, Matthew, I'd be curious as to, I looked into Merrill Kelly's next run that he's got from a starting pitching perspective. So he's a two-stepper this week. He's got the Dodgers on Sunday, which is going to be a tough one. But if you get past that, he gets to face San Diego back-to-back. He gets to face the Rockies at home. And then he faces the Giants back-to-back. That is a pretty damn juicy August for Merrill Kelly to rip off a monster run. Now, I do like that Padres lineup. It's a little scary at the top because I think there's...
But in Petco and in Chase Field.
So he's not, and he gets to avoid the Rockies in Coors. Mm-hmm. He's going to face them at home. And then that Giants lineup, there's a couple of sticks, but honestly, I is super scared of them whatsoever, right? So would you buy in to Merrill Kelly being a buy, knowing that that is what he has lined up for his next five starts? San Diego, San Diego, Rockies at home, San Francisco, San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been burned by Merrill Kelly. I was kind of in on him at the beginning of last season, and his velo was up, and he had a fantastic first outing. And then I got confident in rolling him, and it was just a roller coaster last year. Yep. So I just recently pulled up the TGFBI ownership percentages, and he's currently owned at 71% in TGFBI. I expect that to get pushed up. He's 97% owned in the NFBC main event. So in the high stakes leagues, he's already been, you know, pretty much touted and rostered with. So it seems like high stakes guys
for me.
Go ahead.
In my online championships, he's available in both, and he's available in both of my main event qualifiers.
That's right. So the first two leagues I mentioned, the NFBC main event and the TGFBI, those are both 15 teams.
Yep.
And now that you mentioned 12 teams, and these are sharp, sharp 12-team leagues, the NFBC RotoWire Online Championship, Merrill Kelly is only owned in 10% of leagues. So if I'm telling you he's only 10% of leagues, I'm almost sure that if you're in a home league, 12-team, 10-league setup.
Oh, he's there.
He is available. So. Yep. Matt and I are both giving you two thumbs up. Yes, add Merrill Kelly. That is juicy. And I, you know, I like to look ahead, and you know that you've given me compliments before on trying to find the two-step, not the next week, but the week after. But going down the line, and what you just brought up with Merrill Kelly is very fascinating to me. And that perks my ears up, and I'm willing to invest a little bit there.
Yeah, I think, you know, unfortunately, if you didn't buy in, and obviously, you know, I play more 12-team formats, Matthew plays more 15-team formats. As Matthew mentioned, in 15-teamers, he's probably more owned, and so it could be a little bit harder to find him. If you're in a 12-team format or a home league, as Matthew says, I would seriously, I think you go look, I think you make a bid if he's available in your league. Obviously, you don't get, and maybe it's to your benefit that you get him to miss the Dodgers on Sunday, but man, that is... as about as good as it comes for a five-start stretch. You know, Rockies out of Coors and then Giants back-to-back is a pretty damn good schedule. Now, that also makes me think if there's any way, you know, a Diamondbacks starter gets hurt, if Luke Weaver's available, I'm sure that Robbie Ray, Madison Bumgarner, and Zach Gallen are all owned. So you got to look at the back end. But, you know, take a look at those guys. That's an interesting stretch they've got coming up for sure.
So we're done with pitching altogether, and the next person that we want to talk about is Jose Martinez, who we have seen at the middle and the heart of the lineup for the last 2 days on Monday and Tuesday for the Rays. And we have Austin Meadows tentatively, or we're hoping that he returns maybe by this weekend, hopefully by Monday at the latest would be worst case. He had a live simulation yesterday and had four at-bats, so everything sounds good. He was tossing from, I want to say, 120 feet, and just they're just trying to get him ramped up to game speed. So Austin Meadows, he's their best player. He'll be back soon enough. So does that give you concerns, or we just got news yesterday, G-Man Choi had shoulder soreness and had some issues making a play, and now he's hurt and didn't really look comfortable in the box, so he was pulled out of the game. Does Austin Meadows' return concern you for Jose Martinez, or does G-Man Choi's shoulder soreness and the uncertainties that come with that kind of just leave that wiggle room available for Jose Martinez? Where are you at on him?
Well, so I would have told you, so Jose Martinez, the Cardinals gave him away, and quite frankly, Jose Martinez probably is a true DH in every sense of the word. So unfortunately, the hindsight is 2020 philosophy. The Cardinals could have used that bat this year and let him DH. But with all that being said, here's what I think happens, and Matthew, I'm really curious to see kind of what you're thinking there as well. So I think against right-handed starting pitching, what they're doing for the most part is, as you mentioned, and to be determined, right? But as you mentioned, G-Man Choi is playing first base batting leadoff. Tsutsugo, who's obviously the greatest player of all time, and you've heard us gush about him, he's playing left. Kevin Kiermaier's in center, and Hunter Renfro's in right. Obviously, Austin Meadows is going to come back and take one of those spots. I would guess, and it's totally a guess, I would guess that Austin Meadows is going to come back and occupy one of those outfield spots. And I just don't remember off the top of my head, Matthew, did Austin Meadows play – he wouldn't have played center field last year, would he? Because Kiermaier would have been there. Did he play left or right?
No, you're setting me up for a segue here. So the thing that I was going to guess is J.D. Martinez. Well, getting ahead of ourselves. So Jose Martinez, I would assume against righties, Hunter Renfro likely maybe even hits the pine. And if that happens, Austin Meadows is obviously your everyday right fielder, and Jose Martinez, I don't know why I want to keep saying JD Martinez. He gets that DH spot, and I think that that's magical for them. He looks good. He's making hard contact.
Really good.
And he's a fucking pure hitter. I mean, this is built for him, and that lineup, I love this lineup, man. There's so much flexibility. They're so versatile. And it's like I hate saying the poor version of something, but it's like they are the poor version of the Dodgers, but I dig it. You know, I dig it because they are churning and burning, and they're just moving that Rubik's Cube so quickly, and they're lining up the colors properly. And it's a beautiful thing to see what they're able to do with the economics that they have. And we've all liked the bat. We've all overinvested prior when there wasn't a DH in the National League. We still wanted to make up our own hypotheticals and say, he'll find his way into the lineup. He's got a good bat. Well, now there is a DH, and there are still some uncertainties in the Rays lineup. There is an Austin Meadows right now. Yes, he is going to return, but Choi has a shoulder issue. Yeah. A lot of these players are young. This is Manny Margot's first season there as well. So there are opportunities for Jose Martinez, and if his bat keeps playing, they're not going to take him out. They'll just simply just keep him as the DH and figure out everything else, because a lot of their players are versatile. They can move around. They can play multi-positions. We saw yesterday, we were talking about our boy Yoshi Tsutsugo. He started on left field. Guess what? He finished the game at third base. Okay? So they can do a lot. And if someone is going to give them a consistent bat like Jose Martinez, he's not going to get out of that lineup. So I'm definitely interested in looking into Jose Martinez as the season goes on.
Yeah, for sure. I think just to add to what you said, that lineup, I think it's one that you want pieces of. You've done a really good job, Matthew, of outlining in the past of players like Kike Hernandez, Chris Taylor, if you want to grab pieces of an explosive offense. I think we're kind of scratching the surface of what the Rays are going to be And I think you want to invest and get a piece of this offense. And one of the ways to do that is through Jose Martinez, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's right. So it's crazy to see how much draft capital or fab investments will be made on players simply because of the teams that they play on, rather than the player and the position eligibility or the spot in the lineup they have. Like, we're going to have, and we're going to touch on this definitely this weekend, when the San Francisco Giants head to Colorado. They're going to play three games in Coors Field Monday through Wednesday. And there's guys like Alex Dickerson still available that's hitting cleanup every day. There's scrubs or old scrubs like Hunter Pence and Pablo Sandoval that aren't sexy anymore that could likely just mash in Coors Field still. Mm-hmm. And there's still the boring guys like Brandon Crawford that can fill in at middle infield. So no, long term, those guys aren't something that we're really looking forward to, but it just goes to show you, like, they're the Giants. The team context is, it's oatmeal, as my buddy Eno Saris likes to say. It's pure oatmeal. And so people aren't going to want to, you know, keep looking at them. But if there's players that are viable in good hitting spots and they're playing every day, they need to be owned. They need to be rostered, because Absolutely. It's baseball and production does happen. And they're major league players, and they're getting paid for a reason to be hitting third and fourth, albeit on a crappier team.
Yep.
They're professionals. So you can't just ignore the team context or the hat or colors that they wear. And you did mention Chris Taylor. That's the last guy that we have to mention here. And
yeah,
you saw that the first one or two games, Chris Taylor was on the pine, and Kike Hernandez played every single game for the Dodgers, by the way. He has not sat once. He has been on the field and in the lineup every day, but we've now seen him get dropped to the eighth in the batting order, where Chris Taylor has now played the last few games in a row, and he's been hitting fifth right behind Cody Bellinger. And that was against a lefty, though, so if it's against a righty, you're going to see Corey Seager hit fifth. And when we did see the right-handed pitching and Chris Taylor was in the lineup, he was hitting sixth. Chris Taylor is now available because people were thinking, or they were under the assumption, that Chris Taylor, with his speed and his hot, you know, the summer camp or whatever, Chris Taylor was scolding the ball. So those in high stakes leagues, or in any draft that I was in, Chris Taylor was being drafted over Kike Hernandez. And then we saw that this last week, with Kike Hernandez getting every day playing time, Chris Taylor was kind of cut on a couple teams because he didn't make the starting lineup the first couple days. But now we're starting to see Chris Taylor get the playing time as well, and Kike Hernandez and Chris Taylor could both be viable. Yeah. And like you mentioned, they're in the Dodgers lineup. They might not play every day, but what if they play 3 or 4 days? Is that more valuable to you, Matt, rather than a player that's playing 4 days in the Giants lineup if they're not in Coors? What are we doing with Chris Taylor if he's available? And he has multi-position eligibility.
Yeah, I think it's a great question that you have to ask because there's a fine balance to strike, Matthew, which I think is what you're getting at. Are you taking the volume of overall results, which may be mediocre, or are you taking the overall quality? And I think in a case where it's 3 out of 4, in the case of a Chris Taylor, I would have put Kike Hernandez in that group. But like you said, he's playing every freaking day. But let's say Kike Hernandez goes to a place where he's playing 3 out of 4 days. I still want the quality of 3 out of 4. Versus the quantity of the 4 out of 4. Now, that choice to me, Matthew, gets harder as you go through on who the 4 out of 4 is. But that's kind of the gauge or the barometer that I'm using. And that's some of the challenges I've been doing. In my mind, Matthew, I'll pivot the question back to you. Let's say the Cincinnati Reds are playing a volume of right-handed pitchers. Are you doing a Jesse Winker or a Kike Hernandez?
Oh, for me, it's Jesse Winker. If he's playing against a right-handed starting pitcher, I'm all in. I mean, he's hitting leadoff or cleanup or fifth or whatever. I'm trying to get better at this, man. So the first weekend, you get burned. They start off against Matthew Boyd, the Cincinnati Reds, and then you go, okay, there's two more righties coming up. Let's sit Jesse Winker. Because it's not in the opening day lineup, you're only getting 2 out of 3 games, and which is fine over the weekend, especially if you're wanting that volume over – you know, efficiency. But I, like, this week I rolled Jesse Winker everywhere. He wasn't in the starting lineup yesterday, and I immediately, you know, just looked at the schedule ahead and each pitcher that was going to, the handedness of pitcher. And I said, okay, I need to roll Jesse Winker, because once this left-handed starting pitcher gets eliminated from the game and the bullpen's intact, we've already seen the Reds go immediately to Jesse Winker. Yesterday he came in, I started him, boom, RBI single right off the bat. So the production is real right now, and he does look really good in the box. So I was high on him last year. I'm high on him again this year, and I'm willing to bite the bullet once or twice a week, if it is even twice a week. We've dissected this before the season started. This both central divisions do not have a plethora of left-handed pitchers or starting pitchers, and the quality of those starting left-handed pitchers is not elite. So if they're not elite, they're not going to be going deep, especially with the DH in the NL now. And it's summer, so the ball's flying, the ball's juicy, it's bouncing. These pitchers are getting yanked, and these relievers are coming in. And once a reliever comes in and they're right-handed, Winker is getting plugged in right away. Yep. And I love that Reds lineup. I love their ballpark. Yeah, I have to go with Jesse Winker.
He's the first left-handed bat off the bench, right? I mean, if you're –
That's right.
They're not going to pinch Akiyama in that spot. They're going to pinch hit Winker, which is gonna, which could mean, too, like you mentioned, it's not what we're probably all used to – which I think you bring up a great point, Matthew. It's not what we're used to, where Jesse Winker may be getting a pinch hitting appearance in the eighth or ninth. We saw yesterday Jesse Winker get a pinch hit appearance, I think, in the fifth, which led to a second at bat in the game. So I think you have to think of it that way, because they are going, to your point, right away to Winker if a righty comes in. And he's not just getting one at bat, he's getting two, which is a great thing to remember, because you look at that starting lineup, like you mentioned, and you get nervous, and you're right, you probably should be nervous. But then as soon as that lefty comes out, that they immediately go to Winker. So they clearly believe in him by flopping him even between leadoff. And I think he's been batting cleanups in some spots too, right?
Yeah, with Moose out. Yeah, he I think it was fifth actually behind Castellanos. Castellanos. But either or, he's either one or five, and he's in the thick of that juicy lineup. And the one last thing is, like, if you really did want to look at it, so we all know that there's more right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching, right? Like, that's just inevitable. We know that. It's just math. And you mentioned Kike Hernandez versus Jesse Winker. And we've seen Kike Hernandez play every day, but we know that Kike Hernandez is, like, so much better against left-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. That is like where, like, and we won't get a full week where it's, what if Kike Hernandez was getting nothing but left-handed pitching and Jesse Winker was getting nothing but right-handed pitching? That would get close to like, wow, both are just amazing options. However, more times than not, you are going to have the Reds facing the majority of right-handed pitching. And Jesse Winker is, man, he's legit, dude. The guy can swing the stick and he looks good right now. So,
yep.
Yeah, I would have to say Jesse Winker, but Kike Hernandez and Chris Taylor are still both viable. Plug them in. They play for the Dodgers. That lineup is going to continue thumping. There was something that I missed, and it is actually in your backyard, Matt, and I want you to just take the floor again, and it's on the Cardinals situation right now with Miles Mikolas and Tommy John surgery. We have Daniel Ponce de Leon pitching today. I quote tweeted after Miles Mikolas. I was being facetious, albeit Miles Mikolas with the Tommy John issue. I was being facetious and said, oh, well, Kim get another shot in the rotation, because we saw in spring that you touched on that Kim's pitch count was just extremely high, one of the highest. Mm-hmm. And so that would be interesting. And then what are we doing with Ryan Helsley? And then we've noticed that Alex Reyes was actually only missing time due to COVID. And now that he's back, and the Cardinals' initial plan with Reyes was sliding him into the rotation. Please give the listeners on all of those little tidbits. What are we doing with the Cardinals?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And so if Matt Kupferle were in charge of the Cardinals, what I would have done I would have put Kwang Hung Kim into the starting rotation to start the year. I get that they didn't maybe have a spot for him. I figured he was going to be one of those guys, though, that finds a way to get into the rotation. I think that's happening now with Miles Mikolas. Now, today, as you mentioned, they're starting Daniel Ponce de Leon, who I also actually really like a bunch. But I don't know that that's a permanent thing. And I don't know what they're thinking with Kim as the closer, because he looked horrific in the opening game of the 2020 season. So if it were me, I mean, Kim's already been stretched out. He's obviously comfortable in that starting role. If anybody's unfamiliar, Kwang Hyun Kim has never closed the game out before prior to his save on opening day of this 2020 sprint. He's clearly more comfortable as a starter. If it were up to me, I would shove Kim back into the rotation. Maybe, you know, he can go in a week from now and get the correct preparation. And you made a very prescient point on Diego Castillo being available. I just checked in my own leagues on the NFBC. He is available in every 15-team league that I am in and every 12-team league. He was cut last week when Kim became the closer, which is overreaction theater probably to an extent.
Add Diego Castillo.
Yeah. And then I think another one to do the same idea is Ryan Helsley. He's available in my TGFBI league. He's available in my main event qualifier, and he's available in one of my two online championships. Ryan Helsley has thrown the heck out of the baseball to start the season. I think there's a chance that Ryan Helsley gets saves before the end of this year is done. I'm not super concerned about Alex Reyes. I just don't know that he's been built up, and he struggled a bit, not only in spring training but in summer camp. So if it's me and you got a couple bucks and you've got the ability to burn one of those seven bench spots in an NFBC format, use it on Ryan Helsley. That's my take. What are you thinking on the Cardinals situation? And would you buy back in on Helsley if he's available?
I would. I currently own Helsley in at least one main event, and I know that Gallegos is the higher owned player.
Yep.
And it could Kim could just potentially just keep the job, and they could just kind of
yep.
Cardinals, you know, doing Cardinals things, but
yep.
We do know that Kim is stretched out, and he was, from what we thought, slotted to be in that rotation. And now that Mikolas and all of his innings that he eats is out, I don't know, man. Helsley does look good. The age and, you know, cost prohibitive, that's kind of lingering in my back mind. But the Cardinals, they make money, and they're not a cheap organization. And they've been pretty good to a lot of their players when it comes to contracts and how they treat their players, and especially the fan base there as well. There, it's a really loyal program in St. Louis. So that doesn't really, like, you can't really dictate people's contracts and how they're gonna manage them, because he's the best pitcher, but no, we can't let him get the save category because we don't want to pay him an extra $1 million. Like, fuck that, dude. If it comes push comes to shove and Helsley's the best guy in that pen and the Cardinals are competitive, they're going to use Helsley as the closer.
Absolutely.
So you can hold guy. You know, people are hoarding Gallegos. I mean, they're hoarding him. And he's another – I call these people unicorns. And it's not that I dislike the player, but there's players that – and Jose Martinez was a unicorn, for example. Kyle Tucker, by the way, breaking news. Breaking news on the podcast. Uh-oh. Kyle Tucker is beating off today for the Houston Astros against Dustin May with George Springer hitting the bench in his – 0.050 batting average to begin the season. It's crazy what happens when a trash can isn't being smacked in your fucking ear when you have a fastball or a curveball being thrown at you, huh? And I am being facetious because I do own George Springer in one of my main events, but fuck him. And so it's just you got to take everything a little bit just with a grain of salt, because people are wanting to just hope and pray. Like, Gallegos, I like him. I invested him. I drafted him. If you drafted Gallegos, I guarantee people are thinking or saying Gallegos is the closer. You drafted Kim, you want to just keep saying he's the closer. Look, he saved the game. And then people that hold Helsley, like me, I'm in that boat as like, oh, no, he's going to be the next to get the job. I've got to be optimistic. I drafted him. I think I'm right. At some point, you know, within the next week, especially in this sprint season, you're going to really have to be honest with yourself and myself included. If Kim continues to be the closer and we see that, and you know, this week over the weekend, and he gets a second save or a third save, cut Gallegos, cut Helsley.
Yeah.
They're not the guy.
Yeah.
But for now, I think both should be a hold. We don't know what's going on in that Cardinals rotation. And so you just kind of, you've got to be a little bit patient with them and wait it out. And it's fluid right now. So
I agree.
This is kind of,
The only thing that – and the only – the where I'm going to be a little bit more – I don't know if this is necessarily bolder. In my opinion, I think you need to be a little bit more bullish on a Helsley over Gallegos, Matthew, and here's why. Both have only made one appearance this year. Gallegos actually came in and only faced two batters, so it was kind of a unique situation. They let Helsley go a little bit, and he absolutely dominated. And what was really interesting to me, Matthew, was last year – Helsley threw 57% fastballs. He was a big-time fastball-curveball guy. And it's only been one outing, so who the hell knows how this is going to translate. But in the outing the other day, he threw his cutter and his curveball were the two most pitches that he threw, and he kind of shelved that four-seamer. if he's going to make a pitch mix change like that, that is super interesting to me if that's really what he's going to change his arsenal to. And that's going to generate the swings and misses that we need from Helsley over them, him just pumping 98 miles an hour and letting guys put the ball in play. So keep an eye on it. If you've got a stash one, if somehow you bought the whole Cardinals bullpen, I think Clay Link did that in our online championship. If it's me, I'm keeping Helsley, and I'm actually probably getting rid of Gallegos or selling Gallegos if I'm in a pinch.
Beautiful. So that kind of wraps up most of what we wanted to talk about. But a couple things before we peace out here. We've got Nate Pearson making his debut tonight against the Nats and Max Scherzer. We're going to be monitoring Lucas Giolito to see if he can right the ship against the Indians on the road. What about Charlie Morton's velocity? Is he going to be able to figure those things out? And are you with any of those four highlights? Are you concerned, excited? What are you biting your nails? What are we doing?
I'm always concerned about velocity. This was the whole thing that made me super nervous about Chris Sale a year ago after the Red Sox won the World Series and they were, you know, just taking their time getting into things. You don't have time to get into things in this 60-game sprint. It's just like managing your fantasy teams. Certainly, I'm not saying you overreact and you cut Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger right now. Those guys are going to be fine. As Brian Vogel told me once, their numbers are going to look like on the back of their baseball card like they normally do. Those guys I wouldn't be freaked out about. Mm-hmm. I do get freaked out when guys are down a couple of miles an hour. Maybe I'm just too pessimistic, Matthew. Guys like Carlos Martinez. Carlos Martinez was down 3 miles an hour last night from quote-unquote normal, and he said that was just his plan. Well, I'm sorry, Carlos. Then your plan was stupid because you got shelled by the Twins.
Should have changed their fucking plan right away.
I mean, and I get it. It's the Twins, and they're really good, but that was a dumbass plan. You gave up eight hits and walks in 3 2/3. These guys don't have the ability. Now, the Rays are a good team. And if Charlie Morton maybe was working into form, I'm not sure. But quite frankly, Charlie Morton and the Rays are in a really tough division, and every game is going to count. A 4-1 start or a 3-2 start, everything's going to be amplified at this point on what you're doing. So I am curious about him. I'm curious about how Lucas Giolito bounces back after a really tough start. Opening day against the Twins and Jose Barrios. Doesn't get a whole lot easier facing the Indians, but that's the nature of the beast of what he's going to have to deal with is that his division is really hard. So I'm curious to see how Giolito bounces back because I saw some good things on that opening start, but obviously it didn't go the way he wanted either. But no, I'm nervous, and I think you have every reason to be a little bit freaked out with some of these guys and where they're going.
Yeah, I think Giolito will be okay. The guy that I'm kind of freaked out about, and I don't have any shares, it's not a victory lap whatsoever, but Charlie Morton, he concerns me. I didn't want anything to do with him. And a couple of sharp people in the NFBC, you know, in the high stakes pool.
Yeah.
They were pretty freaking high on Charlie Morton, and it almost had me questioning myself and like, why am I so low? And
why didn't you like him?
With that, but.
Why
well, he's had injury histories in the past. Like, yes, albeit with the Rays, he's been lights out. He's been a Cy Young contender, and we've seen everything fantastic from Morton. But he actually made comments, too, in the winter, or not even in the winter, like maybe even in March, about thinking that this might be his last year. And if he ever gets hurt again or doesn't feel comfortable on the mound, and if he's not feeling right, he could just hang it up. And stuff like that concerns me. There was two other pitchers. And so far, so good on Zach Greinke. I kind of put Zach Greinke in the similar pool as Charlie Morton and Trevor Bauer. And albeit all three are a little bit different, especially in age and health. We've seen Greinke be healthy. We've seen Bauer be healthy. But we've seen the peaks and valleys for both. And the concerns that I had with Greinke were similar with Brett Bauer are if something isn't right, they like to tweak. And if you tweak and if that doesn't go right, your ratios are going to get blown up, and you can't afford to have that in this season, especially where they're being drafted. I was wrong on Trevor Bauer, and it pains me to say that, especially because I am a fan with the way he brings his mind to the game and his heart and attitude. I absolutely love him, and I hope that he continues to do what he's doing. But with Zach Greinke and everyone thinking, oh, no, Zach Greinke's smarter than everyone. He's the smartest guy in the room. He's going to just go out there and be Zach Greinke. No, he's not a fucking robot as much as you guys want to think he is, dude. He's throwing like 85. I can throw harder than Zach Greinke right now, okay? So whatever you want to say or think, I've been in main event drafts this year and saw him get drafted in the second and third round. That's absurd. It's absurd. And I'm not going to go on Twitter and I'm not going to do my victory lap, but dude, Zach Greinke, he's cooked. And if he's not cooked, I'm sorry, but he thinks that he's the smartest chef in the kitchen and wants to prove to you that he can change up the recipe to have his pitch taste better than the next. And it's not the case. Like you're already a step behind and he's already done something to damage you when you're drafting him in the second round. Same goes for Lucas Giolito. And I have a Lucas Giolito share, but Lucas Giolito looks a lot better than Zach Greinke right now. And I'm going to bank my money on someone that's younger and a little bit more motivated. So I'm out, and I already was out. And obviously, we're not talking about trades and buy, hold, sell, because what's been done is done. But Morton and Greinke, no thanks.
Yep. Yep. Nope, I agree.
One last thing, Matt, before we close out. Yep. We forgot to mention Taylor Rogers. What the fuck? Yeah. What? Four games in now, they had the same situation. Sergio Romo gave up a run, but they kept him in. And then we've now seen no Taylor Rogers, and he was highly invested sixth round, seventh round in the main event. So
something feels like it's wrong with him and they're not saying it, or maybe, you know, he's working up or something. It's odd because they haven't placed him on the COVID list or the 10-day IL. It would be really dumb to burn a roster. Holy cow. I almost just died from that lightning bolt, Matthew, if you heard that.
Was that a thunderstorm?
Yeah, it's rolling in.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah. Maybe that's the NFBC gods telling me that Taylor Rogers is totally
that's
fine.
That's got to be a sign. So that's our first I don't even know what to call that. But, so I'm willing to guarantee now Taylor Rogers is going to be the best closer this year or the fucking worst.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing with Mother Nature in your backyard on the podcast yet, but that is something.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, something seems weird, but a quick wrap up. They should be using an IL spot for him if something is wrong. The fact that they haven't is odd to me. The fact that they haven't gotten him into a game to get any work is odd to me. It's kind of like the Josh Hader thing. I don't know why he only worked that one inning. I'm not sure. It's confusing.
He looked good though, right?
I mean, no, I know.
But no, and I was kind of already in the back of my head with two, I've invested in the third round main event in Josh Hader. And I was like, okay, something's wrong and we're not hearing it yet. And then on Monday or Sunday, we're going to hear that Josh Hader's not available for whatever reason. I was getting worried, but when I saw Josh Hader, everything looked great. Honestly, I was kind of bummed that he didn't get a second inning, and Council is already starting to look like a jackass because he is having major issues handling that bullpen right now. He looks like he's way above his head. So, we need to give Josh Hader some more burn, and it's going to be interesting to see what the hell is going on with Taylor Rogers. Nobody simply knows unless you're inside that clubhouse right now. So hopefully we see Taylor Rogers make an appearance today. So, even if it isn't a safe situation, I don't care if the Twins are down 7-1. Taylor Rogers needs to get some burn. So I guess that's it, Matt. Do you want to wrap us up and close us out, my dude?
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Episode 6, our midweek episode. Ton of fun. We'll be back on Saturday evening. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the Fab podcast that we're doing. A lot of interaction on Twitter. Please continue to hit Matthew up. Matthew, you can reach him. Matt, if you make sure I keep this right. You can get him at _MattyWood_. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and I'm at M. Kupferly. Please, if you haven't already, rate, subscribe, review, give us feedback. We're trying to make this, you know, not only a really fun podcast, but a really actionable one and give you some good content. And the only way we can do that is that feedback is a gift. So tell us what we're doing well, what we're doing not so well. We want to make this a great podcast. So thanks, everybody, for episode 6. We will be tickling your ears this weekend. And thanks, and enjoy the show. See you later.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast. And we hope you listen again soon.